And welcome to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Monday, December 16th, 2024. I'm so glad you're joining us. And I want to just say a special welcome to the folks in the chat. Thank you so much for joining us live. And the only thing I ask, if you are a radio podcast listener, or even if you listen and watch on Rumble, the only thing I ask is kindly just create a Rumble account and follow us. It has something to do with the, I don't know, the planetary alignment, the way the stars sit in the universe, that really it affects our placement on the live stream alerts, whatever that is. Okay, it does something, but it helps us, and we appreciate that. Got a great show lined up for you tonight. Tonight, Jack Cashel, the author of 17, count them, 17 books. Oh, man. I look at that number, I'm thinking, really? Okay, I mean, wow. Just incredible.
I'm only 17 years old.
But okay, so kind of going backwards, well, not backwards, but in random order, Ashley, this is one of the best books out there in terms of covering all of the this covers 10 women of January 6th, including Ashley, and especially Ashley Babbitt, but Roseanne Boylan and others. This is a great read, from Jack's perspective, my perspective, or from Jack's perspective writing it, and my perspective as a reader. This filled in a lot of blanks. And then here's the other thing too. It really turned me on with Jack Cashel. He, again, of the 17 books, I think I've read probably 15 of them. I might be missing a few, but this caught my attention. Ron Brown's Body. Okay. Remember Ron Brown? Yeah. Hey, good Christmas gifts. All of these books. Okay. I'm telling you, man. And then one of my favorites, another one of my favorites, TWA 800. No one did. I don't think anyone did more work on that than Jack Cashel. Hold on a second. Hold on. And then we have this book, Untenable. Okay, now, this is, I don't even know how to describe this book, except it hits you right between the eyes. It's really about the lack of racism and the lack thereof. It's just a fabulous read, but hold that thought. And perhaps one of, well, the book that I cut my teeth on with respect to Barack Hussein, Barry Satoru, Obama, is this book right here, Unmasking Obama. You notice I had to look at the title, right? I've only read it like three times, but Unmasking Obama. This is tremendous work. But, Ashley, that's going to be an interesting story. Before I get to Jack, folks, again, I want to thank you for your support in this holiday season. My book should be arriving to those who ordered it from the Hagmann store. If you haven't gotten it already, it should be any day now. I want to thank you for that. Actually, it was right up there in the top 100 when it was top 100 in its category when it was released a couple of years ago. Yeah. Top Casey Kasem, man, I can't. Yeah. On the Billboard. Yeah. Coast to Coast with Casey Kasem. All right, folks, but I wanted to say thank you as well to healthwithdoug.com. They're a sponsor, and you know, the Cutting Edge 2024 study shows collagen. Can you believe it? Collagen. That's right. It can have drastically positive effects on skin health. And I had an issue with my skin, which I don't know. Maybe it was, I don't know what the heck it was, but I started taking this, and I'll tell you what, my skin has fixed itself. Well, actually, through the help of this. But the study, in my view, the study found that women, especially, who take daily collagen drink, to take a daily collagen drink, see a noticeable reduction in wrinkles, in firmer, more hydrated skin. And who doesn't like a woman with more hydrated skin, right? Not dust, right? No, hydrated skin. Okay. But it's important not to use just any random collagen. Make sure you use a collagen that's backed by real science. And that's what I use, this amazing multi-collagen. Absolutely love how it transformed my skin for the better. Yeah, even guys use it, okay? I'm drinking my brand of coffee with collagen in it. And I do this twice a day. And I'll tell you what, it's a fabulous drink. So unlike the poorly sourced collagen you'll typically find on store shelves, it uses the top five critically important important types of collagen for skin health. This unique formulation that it's got in it is designed to reduce visible signs of aging, reduce wrinkles, promote a youthful glow. I mean, see how I'm glowing like a pregnant woman? All right. Promote elasticity and promote skin hydration. Simply mix this with your morning coffee or your evening cold brew and protein shake or whatever smoothie. Give your skin that support it needs each day. So do yourself a favor. Grab some while it's 51% off during their holiday promotion only at healthwithdoug.com. Plus, if you order today, you'll get a free VIP live health and fitness coaching for life, a free ebook titled The 14 Foods for Amazing Skin, and a 60-day satisfaction guarantee. Free shipping with your order. Once again, that's healthwithdoug.com. I want to thank them for sponsoring us. But now, without any further ado, a good friend of the program, good friend of mine, hopefully he thinks that way as well, and it's Jack Cashel. Jack Cashel is again an author of 17 books, a writer, producer. He has a Substack. You got to follow him on Substack. You got to get the book, get it now so you can get it in somebody's Christmas stocking, or just give it to him as a gift for Christmas, or any one of his books. But I'm telling you, there's not a bad book in the bunch. So there you go. The links will be in the program description box at HagmanPI.com. And, of course, shown on the screen in the lower third. So with me, Jack. And follow him on X. My goodness. He should have like a trillion followers. I'm telling you. Jack, how are you doing, sir?
Doug, I'm doing great. And thanks for that wonderful intro. I haven't talked to you since you've gotten about 12 feet of snow. But have you dug out yet? How are things?
Yeah, I got to tell you, it was so bad. I had to get a friend, who had a front end loader. Okay. To clear my driveway. And you know what, Jack, I'm moving in with you. Okay. I'm serious. I'm bringing my dog. I'm moving in with you because you don't get snow like that. I don't know. It was incredible. It's 46 right now and drizzly. So yeah. I don't know.
You know, for those who don't know, I have a summer place about an hour, I guess that would be northeast of you on Lake Erie.
Yeah,
we had a couple feet of snow. I mean, I'm not there now. I mean, and people say, why don't you stay there all year? It's such a lovely place. It's right on the lake.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
The interior of Chautauqua County had about 5 feet of snow that 1-2 day blow. So that's why I'm not there. So
I'm right there with you. I told my wife, I said, you know, I'm packing the car, taking the dog. You're welcome to come along, but I'm out of here. And she convinced me otherwise, but yeah. All right. But you've been doing some fantastic work. Now, obviously with Cash Patel coming in, your Substack, in addition to all of your everything else, your Substack is active. You're doing some tremendous work exposing different things. Zero Hedge picked up your article, 20 or so obvious questions about January 6th, which I did print out a copy of that. And also a couple of things related to that is task number one for Cash, find the killer of Seth Rich. I mean, you're all over different topics that really ultimately will expose the government corruption. So I appreciate all that. Where do you want to start tonight? Because there's so much going on.
You know, there is, and it's almost, You know, when I wrote the TWA Flight 800 book that came out in 2016, I was thinking to myself at the time, and I'm probably the chief proprietor of that story, the literary proprietor.
Yep.
And unlike January 6th, I'm just really a tag along there. But when that came out, the book came out, I was thinking, you know, this is a great untold story of our time. Well, in the 8 years subsequent, it's now about maybe in the top five untold stories, you know. I mean, there are so many massively untold stories starting with January 6th.
Yeah.
You wonder how an event that was so public could be so deceptively reported by so many seemingly responsible people in the media. And like so much that happened really before Elon Musk bought Twitter 2 years ago, even the conservative media shied from telling the truth about it. And if they tried to tell the truth, you know, they could be thrown off their networks or their platforms, as, you know, even Tucker Carlson was essentially dismissed because of his coverage of January 6th. You know, I was doing a weekly podcast, kind of a fun thing on YouTube. We mentioned January 6th one episode. They took the whole episode down, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they did not want anyone to know about the most spectacularly public event in many people's lifetimes, you know, and the most consequential. And yet, the last 2 years have really seen a transformation in the way the media behave, because they've come to understand, as they learned in this past November, glorious November that was, that they don't own the landscape anymore. They're renters, just like everyone else. And it's like exhilarating. It's like a new day, right? It's just incredible.
And so with respect to the media, I'm trying to remember who Andrea Mitchell, I don't know, the one wearing the Harry Potter glasses, seemingly mourning the death of the legacy media, you know, and I'm thinking how well deserved that is.
Honestly,
you know, it's people like yourself and others really getting to the bottom of different stories, different, you know, throwing away the narratives of the deep state or the administrative state or those experts. So really appreciate that. And
I'll give you an example, Doug, of,
go ahead.
Of a real life example of how that transformation affects actual people in the world. Yesterday I had breakfast with George Zimmerman. You know, I've gotten to know George well, cause I wrote a book on the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case. I covered it in real time. I went through the trial, et cetera. When I wrote the book in 2013, I had a 6-week deadline post verdict, right? I mean, that was how tight the timeline was. And I had the story right from the beginning. And I got to credit the Conservative Treehouse, Sundance, and those guys for, you know, opening story up. Sure. The major media was, not only did they not cover it adequately, they simply lied. The lies were of such magnitude in retrospect that make your head spin. So what George and I talked about was, now this was the day after Daniel Penny was rightfully honored at the Army-Navy game for his, you know, heroic takedown of, you know, Subway psycho Jordan Neely.
Yep.
And a strongly parallel case. So Daniel Penny emerges a hero. He's feted at the Army-Navy game. He's with Trump and Elon, everyone. 11 years prior, George Zimmerman had been acquitted, also in a case of self-defense, good citizenship against a violent thug, young Trayvon Martin, on the way to a life of crime. And he was treated after the acquittal as a pariah. And he still is, even by the right. And part of the reason is that in 2013, there was no medium powerful enough to sustain a counter narrative, right? I mean, if you tried to get on some website or another, or as I did, you get shot down. You get turned into, you get rejected, even by conservative media sources.
Really? No,
you hear that story. There are exceptions. But for the most part, no conservative politician would take up his case. Certainly not. And as much as I respect Donald Trump's choices, Pam Bondi was the attorney general of Florida at the time. She let this all happen.
Right.
So I give it all, not all credit. There are two major players in the last decade. One is obviously Donald Trump, man of the year. The other is Elon Musk.
Okay. And credit for the demise of the old media, the old guard?
Is that what you're saying? Of the old media and the dawning of an age of truth-telling.
Okay. Well, I can't disagree with you. It bothers me, though. I'm still seeing some censorship on X or old Twitter. I was just thinking about this today, and maybe this doesn't have anything to do with anything, but when you have to, if there is a shooting like there was today,
right,
and you have to not spell the word out shooting, or use at signs in place of O's, or you have to be creative when you're typing about a rape, assault, an illegal alien, a shooting, whatever it might be. When people have to feel like they have to self-censor because they'll get shadow banned or banned, period, we still don't have a free platform.
But we're so much further along than we were just 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah, we are.
Because you think the evolution, there was no evolution. In 2020, Derek Chauvin was subject to the same, even worse, vilification that George Zimmerman was. And the punishment was worse. No one on our side would speak up, almost no one. If you tried to, you'd often get shadow banned or deplatformed or whatever. But it was really... I would say that Musk's purchase was didn't solve the problem, but it galvanized a lot of people. And I think it alerted a lot of people in the center left, the truth-telling left, center lefty, Matt Taibbi's and Glenn Greenwald's and whatnot, to be bolder instead of dancing around the edges.
Good.
To come forward. I mean, because, okay, Musk was an Obama supporter. So is Joe Rogan an Obama supporter? And a lot of people, once they took that red pill, they began to see Naomi Wolf, another good case of that,
Oh, yeah.
To see how the world was constructed, and it wasn't constructed the way they had been told it was.
Very, very true. No, I mean, I can see advancements and improvements, but I just, I just... would like the free. I mean, to me, I'm never going to use a symbol or an asterisk or whatever. I'm going to type what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm going to say what I feel. And we had, before we were kicked off of YouTube, we had just over 220,000, somewhere between almost a quarter of a million, I don't know, of the subscribers on YouTube. Got a plaque, and then they kicked us off. So, I wonder sometimes too, and I'm just wondering out loud, and then I'll let you have this. But, even today, you've got some conservatives that seem to still be supporting that communist, really, that platform of YouTube. While, stepping over the bodies of conservatives, true conservatives and truth tellers. So I just, if everyone supported what they believed in, I think this would be a better, we'd be in a better place. That's all I'm saying. But anyway. Yeah. So a lot of news breaking on January 6th. And I just find it very interesting because you are one of the, in my view, although you say, you know, it's not your, primary story, or it's not yours primarily, you have contributed quite a bit, along with Darren Beatty, as we mentioned before the before the opening of the show, and Julie Kelly, and others, many others. But you have really drilled down on the exposing the Fed's erection and the action of the police officers, and the and I think you were one of the first to really get into Michael Byrd. You know, so again, you know, it's up to you wherever you want to start on your latest findings as compared to what's coming out.
Well, you know, I mean, just the things that have been in the news. One is the revelation, which didn't surprise anyone, and I'm sure they're not telling the whole truth yet, that there were, the FBI had at least 26 assets amidst the crowd that day, several of whom went into the building, and none of whom was arrested. You know, that's not a shocker. What's dispiriting is going back and watching those Christopher Wray interviews where he's being coy and cute and, you know, I'm just lying in every which way, but actually telling a lie he could be held to, nailed down for. And what that doesn't answer either is personally, I believe that there are agents there as well. I mean, I think that'll come out in time. But how many different entities had assets in that crowd, right? For instance, the DEA, the ATF, the Metropolitan Police, the Cap, we know they all did, right? We don't know
Absolutely.
How many.
Absolutely. Yep.
Just for starters, the CIA volunteered their bomb sniffing dogs. I don't know. The CIA had bomb sniffing dogs. Who knew that? You know? So there were many, many different agencies, and I'm sure defense intelligence agencies, the Pentagon, which has a pretty duplicitous role in this whole deal. They had things. I'll give you one example that I discovered that I don't think anyone else had picked up, and partly because of my work with James O'Keefe when he was with Project Veritas. In 2016, they exposed a Democratic practice called bird dogging, in which they would hire homeless guys or guys with mental issues, clean them up a little bit, give them a night's stay, feed them, give them some money, and then send them into a Trump crowd to disrupt it. And that way, when the media turned their cameras on and they saw this ruckus and some poor homeless guy is getting beat up or abused or whatever, then they had their narrative. Trump crowds are rowdy, and it worked. I mean, and throughout 2016, it worked pretty well. Emmanuel Jackson, he shows up at the rally on January 6th. There he is for nearly 2 hours. He has an aluminum bat in his hand, and he's wailing away at the cops with an aluminum bat. It's the most sustained act of violence I saw anyone commit that whole day on our side. On their side, they were shooting, but on our side, that was it. And so I said, okay, now what was the, then you check out and say, what happened to Emmanuel Jackson? Well, he goes up for a hearing. They say, oh, he's a homeless guy. He's not mentally all there. They just let him walk away, right?
Right. Yep.
There's no jail time, no punishment, no nothing, right? And they didn't even ask him, who gave you the bat, right? Who gave you those talking points about globalism, right? You know?
And that was a sustained period of time. And it was obviously, you could tell he was coached.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so, okay.
And you know, that I thought, well, maybe that's the DNC's doing it again, you know.
Right.
I would be shocked if they did it or if someone else picked up on that habit. I mean, we know there were Antifa people in the crowd. Several of them have been exposed. Many of the others haven't. And, of course, some of the most visible insurrectionists, I mean, literal insurrectionists, guys who are leading the charge, guys like the so-called scaffold commander, right?
Yep.
Who's, I think, been identified. That's, I don't want to get into naming here because, as we saw with George Stephanopoulos, you don't want to get beyond your skis when you're trying to assert something. Excuse me. But some people seem to have credibly named him. as a progressive, a known progressive. He, you know, never arrested, never subjected to the kind of, you know, slow torture that so many J6ers have had to suffer, or the guys who set up the gallows on the Capitol grounds.
That's yes. And the police left it up for a number of hours before.
Like 5 hours?
Yeah.
And, you know, I talked to one guy who in one of my correspondents said, Jack, he said, we tried to play volleyball and they took it down in 5 minutes. The Capitol police did, you know, you're not allowed to do things on the Capitol grounds other than, you know, walk around, I guess. I don't know. But
wow.
So there's a ton of stories. And that's what I did the article for. I did it for American Thinker, and Zero Hedge picked it up. And yep. Zero Hedge is a big audience, as I just discovered.
Yes, it does.
And I just listed 20 obvious questions that need to be asked, and they should be asked very soon. And if you ask and answer those questions, you really blow open the whole thing. And up at a superficial level, there are questions beyond that that need to be asked. I think especially the role of the military, General Milley in particular. I think Nancy Pelosi was just stupid and incompetent. Other people disagree with me on that. But I think the real subversion came out of the Pentagon.
To me, that makes sense. I think Pelosi, in my view, probably had her eyes on I guess when you hold a personal grudge against a president or anyone, really, it clouds your judgment. And then, of course, she had her eyes on the money with creating that cinematic whatever it was with her daughter. So, yeah, I mean, okay, I can see that, but I do believe you're right, the Pentagon. But when you said the FBI admitted having 26 confidential human sources, now, what, 30 years ago, I was an operational asset for the FBI and Department of Justice, not a confidential human source. So there's a distinction between the two. Confidential human assets are usually people who are in trouble and they get flipped by the FBI. Okay. Whereas an operational asset comes at it from a different direction, non-criminal. But you mentioned about agents or employees or whatever. I find 26 to be, I think they dropped a digit somewhere. Okay.
Yeah,
on one side or the other. But
yeah, it seems like 26 seems like one of those numbers. Like, you think this is enough to satisfy them? You know, I mean,
yeah.
This is enough to chew on. Well, you tell me, Doug, because you were there. If you're an asset of any sort, doesn't it take kind of a long, isn't there a long term kind of development process that goes on? I mean, they don't call you up out of the phone book the day before and say we're going to use you, right?
Right. Yeah. It all really depends on the situation. Now, a confidential human source can be handled pretty rapidly. Okay. In the operational asset, it's going to depend on this, for example, when I was doing that in the 90s, I was working on behalf of a Fortune 100 company, and it was an espionage kind of case that developed into cases, plural. So I had to go through kind of a process in order to be used. And then at that level too, I would work the case until the door, you know, was busted down and the SWAT team came in, either the local or state or federal. And so I also had to sign the NDA plus a lot of stuff that said, hey, if you get, if we accidentally shoot you or decide to shoot you because we don't like you, and nothing you can do about it. And when I asked for copies of that for my attorney, they just laughed and said, no, I don't think so. But CHS, you know, is a little bit easier walk. Given the fact that, well, the one CHS was associated with Proud Boys, right? So,
yeah,
you know, hey, cooperate or we'll charge you. That was probably right. What do you want me to do? Well, you go in here and do this, 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 and this. and report back. That's probably the extent of something like that, I would imagine. Again, I was never a CHS, so I don't know.
And then is the natural follow-up question is, for which entity was Ray Epps working? He's clearly working for someone, right?
That, to me, is the most blatant of them all. Yeah. Yeah. So I'd like the answer to that. I cannot believe that. I mean, this is my personal opinion. So, Ray Epps, if you're listening or see this, it's just my opinion. I can't believe that guy was just slapped with a minor. What was it? It was a misdemeanor.
Well,
they
waited 3 years to arrest him.
Yeah.
And then he walks away with a year's probation, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, one of the women I track was a great grandmother who went into the Capitol pray for 10 minutes. She got a far worse punishment than he did. In fact, Doug, of the 8 women I profiled who survived, 2 of them, of course, were killed that day, Ashley Babbitt and Roseanne Boylan. But of the 8 who survived, all 8 were incarcerated. And I chose them kind of at random. I didn't, you know, when I first started working with them, only 1 or 2 of them had been to prison. But, you know, by the time, you know, the book came out, or actually even after the book came out, by now, all 8 have been incarcerated.
You know, I found this story, too, of Roseanne Boylan particularly heartbreaking, the way she was treated. And again, folks, the book is Ashley. And, you know, Jack has done some great work, but definitely, folks, please, if you haven't gotten this book, get it. And if you don't want to read it, certainly a member of your family could, I'm sure would. I can't imagine you not wanting to read this, but it really goes into detail about January 6th, necessary details. But, you know, for you to do all of that research and interviewing and talking with the women and their families, I thank you. Just thank you for doing it. But,
you know, and that's the advantage I had over. If you're a Julie Kelly or a Darren Beatty, you're at the front edge and you're breaking the news. But that means that there's stories that are being left behind and that need to be gone into in some detail. So Roseanne Boylan, I would say, if you asked 100 conservatives who were the 2 women killed on January 6th, they'd say 90 of them would say 2, right?
Right.
And maybe 5 of them out of 100 could tell you about Roseanne Boylan. Her story is horrifying and ways even that Ashley Babbitt's is not, partly because it escaped attention, because you know, it wasn't as dramatic as Ashley's shooting, which meant that they could bury the story, which they did.
Right.
They could delay her autopsy, which they did. They could stonewall the family, which they did. They even stonewalled MSNBC, who was assisting the liberals' sisters of Roseanne Boylan. They could falsify the autopsy report, which they did, and they could pass, and they could let walk the one female police officer who was caught on video that day doing the most indefensible and brutal thing anyone did all day. And that is, she was slugging, hammering over the head with a tree branch, a woman who was either dead or dying.
Yeah. Horrifying.
And was stopped only when the branch broke in half. She was hitting it so hard.
Right.
Finally, her fellow officers pulled her off. No discipline whatsoever. There's no crime scene. There's no yellow tape. There's no interviewing eyewitnesses. The people who tried, the guys who tried to protect Roseanne, get extra sentences for, you know, fighting with the police. In fact, I asked Victoria White this question. Victoria survived the day, beaten bloody by a Metropolitan, 2 Metropolitan Police Department officers, both of whom she names in a lawsuit. I mean, literally bloody, blood streaming down her face. She was hit in the face, her shoulders, her head 25 or 30 times. She was maced 2 or 3 times. She was dragged through the tunnel by the police, sent out into the night air, shoeless, phoneless, and coatless, and told to, you know, just get on with her life. This is in Washington, D.C. She's got no phone. Even if she borrows a phone, she's got no numbers, right? And the numbers fall in the, you know, encoded in her phone. They're not in her. We don't have no phone numbers anymore, you know. And the officer for the Metropolitan Police Department gets promoted, right? And Victoria White is just left to her own devices. Story goes uncovered. It is the most brutal beating of a female in the age of video. Ever caught on video in America. And man. And not one American out of 100 could name Victoria White.
That's really sad indeed. I with all of the news, now you talked about the officer who shot Ashley Babbitt, and Michael Byrd, of course, right, is the name. And you have information in your book about Michael Byrd. Now, information, some of which you pointed out, is coming out. Do you want to touch on that? Because this
you're right. He was, he is whatever you were going to say he was. And then some. But in my book, I go into detail on his background, which at that time had been essentially unknown. Most people didn't even know his name or who he was. I mean, he was barely visible in those tapes. He was not visible on screen for more than 2 seconds. Most people didn't know that the shooter of Ashley Babbitt was a black guy until they went public. You know, they concealed him for 8 months. And then they eased him into the world with a softball interview by Lester Holt of NBC, you know, the most congenial of black anchors. And look, I went back and rewatched the interview. I was trying to understand why. And this is a news that has come out in just the last week or so, is that he seemed to have the Democrats in the House over a barrel. Like, they were bending over backwards to appease him, and he was extorting them for benefits. This is crazy. Reckless, unjustifiable shoot that kills a woman unarmed without warning. And the Democrats, and now we've seen texts and emails between various Democrat high level staffers talking about what can we do for Michael Byrd to keep him happy, right? Why are they doing this? Can you imagine them in Minneapolis saying, what can we do for Derek Chauvin to keep him happy? We got to keep him on the reservation. No, they want to keep Byrd on the reservation. And part of it goes back to the interview with Lester Holt. It starts off with, hey, you know, why haven't we seen you in 8 months? Why did the Capitol Police put you up? He didn't say this, but he did. She could have. In the presidential suite at the Joint Base Andrews, you know, in the Ambassador Hotel with your pet. You know, why did you get this treatment for 8 months? Were you getting paid? You know, you're not doing anything. And he said, because of, and he answers one word, threats, right? Threats.
Okay.
No one even saw him. No one knew who he was. It's nuts. And then Lester Holt, as if on cue, I mean, you can do it. The next question is going to be racist threats, right? Racist threats. Yes, racist threats. Oh, America. Oh, poor me, right? So he's established himself not only as the hero of the day on January 6th, one of the hero cops, but a victim of the MAGA mentality, you know, the racist white supremacist mob that was issuing threats to him, even though they didn't even know he was black, even though they didn't know his name or where he was. There were some issuing threats to him for the prior 8 months, right? And he's played it. I got to give it to him, but he's been playing it all his life. Because when you go back and look at Michael Byrd's record, his police record, it's a disgrace. You know, one thing after another. Leaves a loaded Glock in the Capitol Visitor Center restroom.
Right.
Where 20,000 people pass through every day. And the Glock doesn't even have a traditional safety. Kid could have picked it up and shot it, you know?
Yep.
Firing randomly at some teenagers who are stealing his car, right? At the neighbor's house. Getting in racial confrontations with his fellow officers. And the list goes on. Just a series of bad behavior. He's behind in his taxes, probably now to the tune of about $100,000. federal taxes. No one cares. They're all appeasing him. He's like the golden child. And I couldn't figure out the why of it until I went back and watched that interview.
Also, didn't he get like $36,000 or $37,000 bonus?
A retention bonus, right? A
retention, okay.
$37,000. And the other officers were getting $3,000.
Yeah.
Why would you want to retain this, you know, this creepo, you know? And not only that, then he decided to take the summer off. He wasn't going to do his like telework, whatever kind of telework. You can imagine what kind of telework he was doing.
How the hell do you do that? But anyway, go on. Yeah.
Practice shooting people from, you know. I know it's not funny, but they paid him for it. Took a couple months off. They didn't even bother asking him, hey, where were you those 2 months? You're supposed to be teleworking. No, keep paying him. Keep his mouth shut, you know. Protecting him from those racist, taunting people in the MAGA movement, blah, 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 blah.
Now, wasn't he also the on Pelosi's personal security detail?
He may have been. He seems to have been protected by someone well up in that food chain. You know?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Absolutely bizarre with Michael Byrd and the fact that in my opinion that he would be given all of these perks and still working. I mean, that's just crazy.
Especially when you see use of force experts when they watch that, look at that shooting, are horrified.
Oh, yeah. First of all, he didn't have to shoot. Second of all, you had, and please correct me if I'm not accurate in this, but I believe there were police officers behind Ashley.
Yeah, there were seven police officers on Ashley's side of that barricade of those doors, and there were multiple other police officers on Byrd's side, also armed, all of them, right? So when Byrd is being interviewed by Lester Holt, he says, "You know, the most proud, what I'm most proud of is having saved lives that day." Right? Jeez. He said there were several congressmen in that speaker's lobby, one of whom was, at least one of whom was handicapped. Well, there were no congressmen in the speaker's lobby. None of them was handicapped anywhere. They just made it up, right? And there were only four congressmen on the House floor, which is about 100 feet away from the speaker's lobby. They're all Republicans, three of them from Texas, one from Oklahoma, right? And they were jawing with the protesters, right, at the other set of doors, you know, just talking them down because they knew these people. They knew stampeded, but Byrd didn't. Byrd was probably propagandized like everyone else in Washington who, you know, live in that bubble, you know, and they probably saw Genghis Khan on the other side of those walls, right? Man.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. All of these issues, including Byrd, Ashley Babbitt, Roseanne Boylan, the behavior of the Capitol Police, and now we're seeing, obviously, the admissions by some of the Capitol Police on camera where they're saying, we're going to go in undercover as Antifa or Trump supporters, take your pick. So all of this, everything seems staged at this Capitol. And right now, in your American Thinker article, folks, you go to American Thinker, or actually I'll link the article into at HagmanPI.com, and this is the one Zero has picked up. But you write about 1,500 people have been, roughly 1,500 or 1,600 people have been arrested.
I think the last time I saw a number was 1,560.
Okay. All right, and they're still going out and arresting people for this,
sentencing them, right?
Yeah, and sentencing them as well. And despite the pardons, what caught me, and maybe I'm a little bit, I don't know, maybe I'm connecting dots that aren't there, but when I read your book, Ashley, when I see your columns, and then I think about things like, TWA 800.
Right.
Okay. I just see like templates, patterns emerging by the feds, especially by the feds, that tend to cover things up, cover the truth up.
Yeah. You know, and we're seeing that now. PW800 is a good segue to, and how could we have a show and not talk about the drones?
You know? Oh, yes, yes. I mean, yeah, if you, please help me out on this, because this morning I woke up, but I woke up and I thought, you know something, I have a theory, but I'm going to withhold my theory. What's going on? What's going on with this?
Well, see, I do not claim to have the definitive answer, but here's what I know, and that I know that many people are missing this, is that the United States Navy is fully capable of running major exercises off the coast of New Jersey with New Jersey-based technology, right? Nice. In ways that would seem kind of precarious, kind of hairy, you know, especially when you're mixing it with the traffic, you know, coming into and out of major airports. And I'm referring here to the missile test that the U.S. Navy was running in 1996 in the lead up to TW, the disaster that befell Flight 800. They were running tests every 5 days off the coast of New Jersey, south of the coast of Long Island. The information is not fresh enough for me to be authoritative in what I'm going to tell you, but they were running it there because they were using this land-based guidance system that was in New Jersey, and it's made it, and they had to stay within some kind of range of that. But these were regular cooperative engagement capability exercises involving subs, missiles, drones, and and their shoot-down exercises. TWA Flight 800 wandered into the path. They kept it lower than they expected. Someone pulled the trigger. I mean, it wasn't like you can't just accidentally hit a trigger. It just takes a few steps. But they shot down an airplane. And here's what we know. They're fully capable of keeping a secret. And the media are fully capable of cooperating in the keeping of that secret. What makes it tricky now is the transition from one administration to the next, right?
Right.
Personally, I believe these are ours, or friendlies, or maybe they're the aerial equivalent of confidential human sources, you know?
That's an interesting, go on.
They're not ours. No, they're not. We had no agents. Right, okay. I believe they are testing them for some reason, and the reason may be useful. It does have national security implications, which would make for some degree of, you know, restraint, discretion. But what is incomprehensible at this stage, after a week or two of this nonsense, is that the answers you get out of the Pentagon are so stupid. They either bespeak like total incompetence, as in terms of military terms, or absolute incompetence in terms of public relations. And the combination of the two is enough to turn New Jersey red.
You would think that the Pentagon, Department of Defense, could at least make something up, you know, to temper the curiosity and even some of the alarm of the people witnessing this and them. But that they can't even do that, apparently.
Well, you know, that's a good point, Doug, because that's what they did with TWA Flight 800. They could not
exactly
have people believing. There are two things that they could not have people believing. One is they couldn't have them believing that terrorists shot down the airplane, because the Olympics was starting 2 days away. If terrorists could shoot down a airplane, they could shoot down other airplanes. That would cripple aviation up and down the East Coast. And B, they could not, for the sake of their own jobs, identity, election prospects, admit that they themselves, our own Navy, shot down that airplane. So they had to temporize. And so for a month or 6 weeks, they said it was likely a bomb. It was all bomb this, bomb that. All the news reporting, which at that time filtered through the New York Times, was that it was a bomb. And they totally controlled the news space. At that time, it was relatively easy to do. And then after, close to 2 months into the investigation, they decided to make it a mechanical failure. And everyone said, oh, phew, mechanical failure. And then they just let it go away, right? Mm-hmm. The CIA cooperated fully. They ran the operation, right? FBI cooperated. They pushed the NTSB out of the way. The Navy cooperated. Everyone kept their mouth shut. And they went along. And the question I would get, that I always thought was a good question, people would ask me, okay, Jack, I'm going to buy that the Navy shot it down. Actually, the evidence is simply overwhelming. There's no counter evidence. But they say, but how do you keep sailors quiet? How do you keep them? So many people would have known, how do you keep their mouth shut, right?
Right.
And now if it's a submarine, it's not that many people. But if it's, you know, a cruiser or something, there would be a fair amount of people. So I raised this question with a group of retired Navy people about a year or two ago. I said, here's a question I get. I think it's a good question. I said, how could you possibly keep that many sailors quiet? And you know what they did? They laughed at my naivete. They said, Jack, it's not even hard, right? Not really hard, you know? They haven't signed NDAs or said the equivalent, threatened their pensions. Bam, you got a room full of quiet people. And if the New York Times isn't going to listen to you, they can come tell me, right? As though I could do them some good point. No, you know, they're going to come on the Doug Hagman. No, they're not. They're not going to do that, you know? So I actually did have one person come forward and I talked about him. And he was, you know, the rare truth teller among them, but he didn't pull the trigger and he wasn't on the ship that did. He just was in that combat group that was responsible. And his, you know, what he reported was what happened, you know?
Wow.
Spit all the information, burn all the logbooks, head for Bermuda, keep your mouth shut, and we're going to be out to sea for a while, you know?
The similarities, again, in my view, between that and the drone, I mean, between TW-800 and the drones, and then the template used to create the environment for January 6th, I mean, it just seems like it's kind of all the same template, you know. And it's,
lie some more, call people stupid, call them conspiracy theorists, you know. Run out the clock. That's part of it, running out the clock. But it's getting harder and harder because they don't control the informational battlefield they once did. Let me tell you one stupid story that has to do with the drones, okay?
Okay.
You know, I'm from New Jersey, so I hear a lot about this. The county over which they tend to congregate, the drones, the majority, is Ocean County. And people don't know New Jersey. I think, New Jersey's a blue state. Well, Ocean County, which is maybe the second or third most populous county in the state, voted 67-31 for Trump, right?
Okay.
That is the whole New Jersey Shore voted red. So if you want to go on a vacation and you don't want to be surrounded by libtards, come to the Jersey Shore. But, and some years ago, when I was working in healthcare marketing, I had a client in Toms River, New Jersey, which is the county seat of Ocean County. And I was going to visit a friend in Princeton, which is right in the middle of the state. And I didn't want to take the interstate, the parkway up and over. So I thought I'd take the back roads. And so I'm taking the back roads, which are usually, you know, empty pretty much. And I ran into a massive traffic jam. And I'm inching along saying, what could be causing this? It couldn't have been an accident because it's going on for miles. And then I finally get to the source of the problem. It's a town called Grover Mills, New Jersey. And the date I was there was October 31st, 1988, the 50th anniversary of the day that Orson Welles' Martians landed in Grover Mills, New Jersey, right? And they were having this big festival, right? I said, well, I guess it's kind of cool that I'm here, but I'm running 2 hours behind my next appointment, you know? So like an extension of that whole phenomenon for people who are, I mean, I heard this story from my parents. You probably heard it from yours, but my parents lived in New Jersey and they were in the Martian's path. They were among the terrorized, right? So Orson Welles was an up and coming, then it would become a major film director, but then a just a presence, a media presence, did a radio broadcast called War of the Worlds based on H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. But he said it not in England, but in New Jersey, Martian's land. And they ran it as though it were a news broadcast. So most of the people didn't catch the opening. And it was on Halloween night. And so people were listening glued to the radios thinking, my God, this is true. It's they're coming. They're marching. They're coming towards North. They're coming to New York, blah, 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 you know. A panic up and down the East Coast. Well, that's what this reminds me of. You know? So if I find out that there's an Orson Welles behind this, I won't be shocked.
Well, you know, I was thinking about the spy balloon in conjunction with these drones. And Congressman Burchett was on a show tonight, a radio show tonight. And I don't recall the news show, but it was with Natalie Winters. And he was saying how he believes that obviously the government knows exactly, yeah. You know, what this is all about. But he assigned, and this is my theory as well, he assigned this nefarious element to it. He said that, you know, for whatever reason he made this statement, I don't know. And he said it was speculation, but he thought there might be communist Chinese and or Russian, but specifically communist Chinese benefactors behind this. Okay, it could very well be our equipment, but whatever the end result might be being sent to communist China for, again, for whatever reason, kind of like the spy balloon that supposedly didn't transmit any information. Yeah, right. But anyway, that's kind of, and I'm thinking, because what would cause the government not to say anything, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, like with the missile test that preceded TWA Flight 800, is their degree of secrecy is understandable because you don't want the enemy to know what your capacities are, you know?
That's true.
And you don't even want to alarm, like to say the people who live or to fly out of JFK, that, you know, there's maybe missile tests going on around you. And then you say to yourself, why would they run tests in a crowded airspace? Well, the purpose of these missiles is to take out incoming objects that are coming into a crowded airspace, into, like, say, New York City, as we saw in 2001, right? And if these systems were to work, they had to be able to work in that kind of environment. There's no sense testing them in the middle of the Pacific or, you know, when there's nothing around and there's no distractions. But at the same time, you expect them to work well enough to subject them to a test that could have negative consequences, as this one apparently did. So there are reasons, the explanations that the Pentagon gives are just pathetic. Now, tell me this, Doug, and I'm trying to time this. When did these start? How long ago did these sightings start? Do you know?
It's my understanding the first report was November 18th.
Okay.
That's my understanding. So you're looking right now 2 days shy of a month.
Because I wonder whether they were tied in with the election. You know, in other words, they're not wanting to do them before the election because it would reflect badly on the Biden administration.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Again, you know, look, I don't know. I've heard many, many theories, but I certainly don't know. But I believe it's, you know, as much as it could be incompetence, I also believe it's deliberate. It's a deliberate, I don't want to say psyop, but a deliberate cover up, I guess, of really what's really going on. Because you can't tell me that we don't know what's going on.
No, I have to believe we know what's going on.
What troubles me, Jack, it's my understanding that I didn't think President Trump was accepting the presidential daily briefings as he did in 2016, simply for the fact that they couldn't use any information that they gave him against them, number one, and number two, that they would lie to him anyway. So I didn't think he was accepting them, but apparently he is. And he made a comment today about the drone activity, saying, you know, maybe I won't go up to Bedminster, and he suggested in his remarks that, I know, but he didn't really come around and say, I know about it, but I just got the feeling that he knew something and wasn't saying anything.
You're exactly right. That's exactly my takeaway, because I saw that. And he seemed to say that first he was critical of the government's response of not being upfront and telling people about it. And then, but he then did suggest that he was being briefed, right? And he was coy about it, right? So he's not in a position, unlike, say, Biden, where he has the authority to say what's going on, right?
Right.
And I think he was critical of the way they've been handling it, which is fair from his perspective, without giving away too much. So that's, you know, it seems to me, Doug, that there should only be one story right now, this, right? You know, and the problem is that we're all talking about it. We don't know anything. So you kind of exhaust your ability to talk meaningfully about it. But if this is like a Chinese, you know, operation, or if it's an alien operation, right? it's like the end of the world or something. It's like the beginning of a science fiction movie, you know?
Yeah.
Where people see something and they say, oh, look at that. Isn't that cute? Let's go. And then some yahoo comes, I'm going to go shoot it down, right? And then it gets vaporized or something, you know? And then we move on from there. A lot of science fiction movies start with something just like this, you know?
Exactly. And that, to me, to me, this whole thing is irresponsible. And I don't know if I feel better after watching President Trump, that news conference and the comments he made, or feel worse about it. I'm not sure. I don't know. Time will tell. Folks, my guest, good friend, Jack Cashel, I'm going to tell you right now, Ashley, you've got to grab this book, especially for Christmas. And if you can't get it before Christmas, I wouldn't know why, but certainly get it for an after Christmas present, or just for yourself for reading. A lot of answered questions in this book, The Untold Story of the Women of January 6th, Ashley Babbitt, and nine others as well. Plus a lot of great information in there that you may not know that Jack had before pretty much anybody else had. Before I get back to Jack, it is Monday, the 16th day of December 2024. I think there were 35 days before the inauguration, and 9 days before Christmas, as if you need me to count. I want to thank you to everyone that's helping this platform. Thank you so much for sponsoring us, as well as our sponsors, including ProteinWithDoug.com. ProteinWithDoug.com, folks. I take protein powder as well. And most protein powder has promised results, but secretly load you up with carbs and sugars that hold you back. This cutting-edge 2023 study exposed how much these extra carbs and sugars can drag your energy down and stall the fat-burning process. So why settle for protein that works against you when you could give your body exactly what it needs to perform its best? I mean, really, you wouldn't want to do that. So this is why I use my new secret weapon to give my body what it needs to build muscle and burn fat. Boy, that's a great combination. This amazing new product is the most delicious way I've found to cut carbs, curb cravings, and manage my weight. It tastes like a chocolate milkshake, actually. It's a low-carb protein that uses mouth-watering ice cream flavors. You can tell which flavor I like, right? To promote muscle building, weight management, and workout recovery. Plus, every scoop uses clean, premium protein source from pasture-raised cows that you can't find in most alternatives. Just mix this with your morning coffee protein shake. I don't do this in coffee. I do a special shake or smoothie to give your body the support it needs each day. So do your body a favor and grab a free bag of grass-fed protein powder during their holiday promotion only at proteinwithdoug.com. Plus, you'll also receive free health and fitness coaching and a free shake recipe cookbook with your free bag of grass-fed protein powder. Once again, that's proteinwithdoug.com. And I want to thank them for helping us pay the bills. So with me is Jack Hashel, again, author of 17, count them, 17 books, and just a fantastic journalist and a great guy all around, talking about a number of things from drones to January 6th and everything in between. TW 800, wow, man. And didn't talk long enough, we'll be talking about the Clintons and Ron Brown. But yeah, as opposed to doing that, yeah, I've got some more questions about one last question about the drone activity. I wouldn't put it past the government to, do this, and in the meantime, have Biden pardon, like, how many people did he pardon? 9,000 so far, 8,500 so far. I don't know. He's going apparently for a record. I think Jimmy Carter holds the record, but that's because he pardoned 200,000 draft evaders for the Vietnam War. But anyway, he's getting up there. Biden is. But are you worried about maybe what we're not watching at the moment while this is being conducted? This drone stuff is happening.
I think that's a legitimate worry. I got to turn something off here. Hang on.
No worries, man.
You hear that beeping in the background?
No worries. Yeah, if you hear beeping, I have to change the smoke detector battery up here. It beeped once earlier. I haven't heard it since, so I don't know. Yeah, it's just always something that I'm looking at. What else? You know, what are we missing in terms of activities of the day? And you also have to ask yourself, too, where's Biden? We know where Harris is. I mean, we've seen him. Of course, we've seen Biden off and on, but really, where is he? Where is he on this issue? Why isn't he speaking to this issue? Why is no one asking him about this? Sure, they can ask the lesbianic press secretary, but really not getting any answers. It's not like he comes out and gives answers. So, you know, anyway, yeah, what's going on in addition to the drone activity that might be being covered up by that activity? So, Jack, your thoughts.
Yeah, and I worry about those pardons because I have no idea who these people are or why they're being pardoned. And it sets a really terrible precedent.
Oh, you got a number of bad dudes in there.
Yeah. I mean, you know what it reminds me of? Remember when Clinton left office in 2001, and it was like the disgrace. It was like his legacy was being marred by these pardons. Mark Rich, remember this guy, this international financier bandito who had, you know, fled the country after being indicted, or, you know, there's even a mystery about him, but he had a nice wife who gave him money and stuff. And everyone was shocked and horrified. And now they make believe it's like it's no big deal, you know?
Exactly. You know, excuse me. It's difficult for me to process. I think three communist spies, their sentences were commuted, and I think they were swapped in some fashion. But then you've got a judge here in PA who is one of the most scummiest, one of the most absolute dirtiest judges on the planet. Again, this is my view, who was pardoned by Biden. And this is a judge who would send children, juveniles, into a privately owned prison for cash kickbacks. And that prison reportedly did not have a great track record with what went on there. So, in fact, one of the junior medals.
Can you give me 2 minutes? I got to solve my beeping problem here, okay?
You go right ahead and solve that beeping problem. But one of the juveniles, and folks, I don't know whether you heard about this. One of the juveniles, when he was released, a little while after he was released from prison, from that private prison, committed suicide. It was so bad. So anyway, the pardons are something that we should really take a look at. The story by the BBC, Biden issues 39 presidential pardons. Now that was several days ago, and commutes 1,500 sentences, which is tossed into that ultimate large number, the aggregate number. But when you start looking into the people who have been pardoned by this regime, including and especially Hunter Biden, I mean, come on, look. You that sets a really bad precedent when you pardon Hunter Biden, in my view anyway. And now Jack's back, so I'm going to ask him. In addition, Jack, you okay?
Okay. I'm not sure I solved my problem, but I think I may have.
Well, no worries. But in addition to the people that Biden pardoned, you pardon your son for a 10-year period that covers really, you know, the Ukraine, Rosatom, all of that stuff to the present. My goodness, what the heck? I mean,
right. And I'm not saying something that hasn't been said before, but you're pardoning yourself.
Yeah,
you know? You're also sort of pardoning your brother Jim, and you know, because you're taking Hunter out of the equation. Hunter was the guy who was managing this whole scenario. You know.
Yep.
And I didn't solve my problem, as you can hear. Either I could live with it, or I'll have to take an instructional course on how to turn my oven off.
Okay, well, don't burn down your house. That's all.
Try not to. Actually, it seems to be off. I mean, but it's just the thing keeps beeping. I don't know what it is. Something I don't know.
I'm going to share a story with you. I don't know what's going on in my house, but like at 5:30 every morning, there is this faint beep. I'm to the point now where I'm looking out my windows to see if there's like drones out there. Okay. But for the last couple of weeks, this faint beep but it's like really muffled, really quiet. And It's driving me nuts. Okay, yeah. I have yet to find that beep, so I can relate. All right.
Yeah. No, it's. I think Jack is on the way here, so smarter people than I are going to address this problem in a minute.
There you go.
Now the Hunter pardon pardon though had sort of a useful function. It disabused many people on the left from making believe that Joe Biden was somehow above the fray when it came to ethics and morality and decency. I don't know if you remember, but just in the weeks and months before he left the race, I was seeing these memes from my Democratic friends on Facebook and whatnot, and they would say, one man's a convicted felon. The other man is a model of decency and honor and integrity. Before Kamala got involved, that was what they're running on. Okay, we can't pretend that he's not incompetent, and we can't pretend that he's sane, but we can pretend that he's still a man of honor and integrity and decency, you know? So,
whoops. Yeah. How'd that work out for you? Gone.
Yeah, right. But it was, and it's especially this accelerated after the debate and in that interregnum between the, we know this guy is now totally mentally incompetent. We don't know what we're going to do with him, so we're going to try to pass him off as, maybe a little old, but nonetheless a model of decorum. And he was neither. He was old, but age was never the issue. And that bugged me when they throw his age out there, you know, because, you know, I know 95-year-olds are totally capable, managing anything.
Yeah,
he was only 2 years older than Trump.
It's not an age issue. It is a obviously a cognitive issue, but the fact that we have had everyone cover for this guy, if you, I mean, not you, but if people, whoever is covering for Biden's decline, regardless of position, in my view, should be charged somehow with whatever. Not for lying to the American people, although they do that, but I mean, that involves national security.
Yeah, I mean, it should be decertified or something. It should have their, like branded, have their epaulets ripped off, or, you know, they're kicked out of the journalism club or something, right? There
something.
Should be some consequence for having helped sustain a 4-year lie, like some sort of gaslighting award where, you know, sometimes you lie about information that no one knows about and they don't even know that they're being lied to. But when you lie about something that everyone can transparently see is a lie, and you continue in that lie, there's got to be a new category when they give out the Pulitzers for that, you know, for just like chutzpah beyond the call of duty, you know. So it was an amazing, it's been an amazing period in American journalism.
Man, exactly.
Those have been spectacular. And if you're probably like me, I watched at least 5 or 6 different compilation tapes of NBC, CBS, ABC, PBS, right? MSNBC, CNN, even the Bulwark meltdown on election night.
Oh, yeah. Now, how can, and forgive me for asking this question, but how confident are you in President Trump's picks, for example, Kash Patel? Because I did notice something in here. Well, again, in your Substack from December 12th of this year, task number one for Cash, find the killer of Seth Rich. Yeah, oh boy, we haven't even touched on that. Solve this 2016 murder in the D.C. House of Cards comes tumbling down. I mean, I remember this. I got into this. But how could, are you pretty convinced that, you know, they're going to do their jobs?
I think they will do their jobs beyond anything that we have seen in the past.
Okay.
In other words, everyone else we put in the FBI was a placeholder, you know, a status quo protector.
Right.
I mean, that's basically their jobs. And none of them, not since J. Edgar Hoover, have we had anyone willing to ruffle feathers. I have a higher regard for J. Edgar Hoover than most people do. I've studied his history pretty well. He had his quirks, but
but I agree with you on that. He ran a tight ship, but
and he built this extraordinary, you know, the world's most honest and uncorruptible police agency with enormous power. And he was always, if you read his history, he was the one having power pushed upon him. So his agents have guns. He didn't want them to have guns because he wanted them just to do the investigative background work, right?
Right.
And then in the 30s, when you had the crime waves and the, you know, the Bonnie and Clydes and whatnot, crossing state lines and robbing banks and whatnot, he was, you know, sort of compelled to arm them. He was at every point resisting. He resisted Japanese internment, for instance, but the FDR and the Supreme Court overrode him. He resisted Richard Nixon. You know, Nixon had to create his own plumber's unit to plumb the leaks because J. Edgar Hoover wanted no part of that. And, you know, sometimes he played ball with presidents when they, you know, Lyndon Johnson, for instance, had the FBI bug Barry Goldwater's hotel rooms at this at the convention. But maybe it wasn't even Barry Goldwater. Maybe it was another Democrat that he was afraid of. But Lyndon Johnson is worse than many of them, all of them. But
that's for sure.
But he was always fighting these people, you know?
Yep.
So he at least brought a certain energy to the job. The other people, I mean, who's had the job since? They just let its entropy into this current state of kind of liberal morass. And because institutions that are not consciously conservative will become liberal and across the board, you know? institution, there's an institutional drift that almost inevitably ends up moving leftward because the forces in the left are more active and more goal-oriented in terms of creating an end game, that is of, establishing a, peace on, heaven on earth through Marxian eyes or whatever. But
right.
No, we need people to shake things up. These are all disruptors. Trump was a circuit breaker in 2017. He had no one else helping him, at the time. He was surrounded by people, he was trying to be a good guy, trying to one to, work with the incoming, or rather the existing Republican infrastructure, the Renz Priebuses of the world and the Paul Ryans and the,
yep.
They all, kind of betrayed him more or less, or weren't strong enough like Jeff Sessions or others. So we need people who come with a chip on their shoulder and an agenda. Give me a Pete Hegseth. Give me a Cash Patel. Give me a RFK Jr. Give me a Tulsi Gabbard. I'll take them all,
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. So, okay. Now we've got, I got to go back before Seth Rich here. I got to go back to January 6th because you did write in your article about the DNC pipe bombs. Now, I know Darren Beatty has done a tremendous job along with Julie Kelly and a couple of other investigative journalists, but certainly Darren Beatty out in front. But you also write here in your article. Let's see if I can find it here. About the pipe bombs at the DNC. Oh, yeah. Who planted the pipe bombs outside the DNC and near the RNC headquarters? Who instructed Harris to conceal the fact that she was at the DNC when the bomb was found and why? I have heard nobody ask her that during her 97-day stint as a candidate or any other time. What the hell was she doing there?
That's the critical question because, anyone could have planted a pipe bomb. That's not even a particularly interesting story that someone planted pipe bombs. What makes the story relevant and which raises its consequence is the fact that I found this clip that I don't think anyone had seen before. And it was from January 17th, 2021. And it was Jane Pauley was interviewing Kamala on CBS Good Morning or some such show. And she asked her an innocent question. She said, Jane, I've got me Kamala. By the way, to pronounce, I don't know why we mispronounce Kamala. Kamala. And communist. The first syllable is the same. It's a mnemonic device that I've been using from the beginning. So I've never been accused of racism. But she said to him, tell me what your day was like on, it must have been one crazy day on January 6th. And Kamala answers, and it's clearly a rehearsed answer. She said, well, yeah, I was over at the Capitol and we had a meeting. And then I get the call and, Doug and I had to leave and we were taken to a secure place, because of the pipe bombs. And no, she didn't even say about the pipe bombs. She just said, we had to leave, blah, 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 secure place, so on and so forth. So she excludes from this narrative the fact that she went to the DNC and she excludes also the fact that pipe bombs were found at the DNC, which is why she had to be taken to a secure location. That is just taken out of this story as early as January 17th. So someone, Doug, had to instruct her to say, do not mention your presence at the DNC because that raises the question of the pipe bombs and your presence there. It was a clumsy cover-up because it reveals more than if she just talked about it openly. So, but that meant for the next year, up in at least for the next 10 months through November, is that she did not let the prosecutors, the federal prosecutors and the judges know that she was at the DNC. They worked under the assumption that during the riot, she was at the Capitol.
And where she should have been.
Yeah.
At the Capitol. Right.
And as a Secret Service protectee, every place she is a designated kind of safe zone. So right. if anyone intrudes on that zone, they are committing another crime, right?
Yep.
And hundreds of J6ers were charged with that additional crime, whatever infraction, whatever level of crime it was. And then it finally, November of 2021, 10 months after the January, it was revealed that, no, she wasn't at the Capitol. They didn't want to say where she was. But she wasn't at the Capitol. They had to amend all those filings. So when Kamala first addressed mm-hmm. the issue, this is, you remember, this is kind of historic. And she's in, the rotunda of the Capitol, and it's January 6, 2022. And she starts off by saying, Pearl Harbor, December 8th, 1941, right? This is how it starts. December 8th, 1941. Someone had to tell her that date, you know, and so, or December 7th, 1941. And December 8th, we declare war. September 11th, 2001, right?
Right.
January yep. 6th, 2021. You know, 3 days that'll live in infamy, blah, blah, blah. And, but she's still in that, little disquisition of hers, even though she mentions that she was not at the Capitol during the riot itself, she doesn't say where she was. So this guy, she's never said where she was.
Correct.
So after the Trump assassination, Doug, you'd think she would say, well, you know, I was almost killed too because I was within 20 feet of a bomb, pipe bomb, said, you know, blah, blah, blah. Nothing. You know, Biden, nothing, right? It's a constant cover up because what it is, it becomes a smoking gun.
And I really believe that, Jack, if we get the truth about the pipe bombs, which I believe it was an inside job. I mean, yeah, but who cares what I believe? But just given the fact that the pristine condition, of the photograph that showed the pipe bomb in such a pristine condition when it was outside supposedly for what, 17 hours.
Yeah.
And then the timing of the finding of that along with the timing of the finding of the RNC one. Look, I think if we get to the bottom and expose that plot, that scheme, about who planted them and the who will tell us the why. And that will also, I think, lead to additional information on Harris. Comrade, I just, instead of calling her Kamala, whatever, just Comrade McKneepads is my name for her. But what do you think that she was doing? Because I was trying to figure this out. What the hell was she doing at the DNC? I mean, do you have any speculative ideas at all?
And, you know, there are a lot of innocent explanations for that, Doug. I mean, you know, who knows? I don't think it was anything nefarious. I don't think she was part of the plot originally. I think she became part of the plot once, you know, I'm speculating here. I'm not sure I'm right, but I think I may be.
Okay.
I mean, the evidence seems to lead in this direction, is that whoever was running the operation with the pipe bombs was not aware that she was going to be at the DNC. And her presence at the DNC meant that there'd be a Secret Service detail at the DNC, which meant that they'd have bomb-sniffing dogs, which complicates the whole scenario now, right?
True.
Which means now it's a clumsy operation, and they're going to improvise a way out of it. And that is part of that improvisation is to make sure Kamala keeps her mouth shut. And then okay. No one knows she was there. No one knows about the Secret Service detail being there. At least, you know, this will cover them for a long time. We saw this, you know, with other cover-ups in the past, for instance, with the Benghazi.
I mean, yes.
The role of the White House and Hillary and others. And initially, this is September 11th, 2012, 2 months before an election, we're just to kick the can down the road past November and hope everyone forgets, right?
Yep.
And when you have a complicit media, that's easy. They did the same thing with the TWA Flight 800.
Joe, that's right.
It's July before an election, re-election year again. Let's just kick this can down the road past November. Hope that everyone forgets, or we could sort it out at the end of the day. And so they did with, I believe, with January 6th and Kamala. Kick a can down the road. And I think the one thing they overlooked was the fact that they were going to end up penalizing hundreds of J6ers with these additional charges to sustain her lie. I think that was a mistake also. And the problem is, Doug, and you've investigated enough of these things to know that incompetence, you know, where incompetence begins and conspiracy ends, is often, they run together often.
Yeah, yep.
And I think the really clever evildoers count on our believing the government so incompetent, for instance, that they could fall asleep when Jeffrey Epstein is in the jail cell. And at the same time, the cameras could break at that same, you know what I mean?
It happens, you know? I mean, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And I think that helps explain the drone stuff, too. You know, oh, the government's so incompetent, they can't even tell us that, you know, alien invaders are ready to drop, you know, laser bombs on our major American cities, you know? So,
yeah. I'm a big believer in incompetence, but I'm also a big believer in them covering their backsides and attempting to, nothing would surprise me in terms of the evil nature, and I say evil deliberately, of, you know, what they're trying to do. I mean, just your books alone. Folks, by the way, please grab copies of whatever Jack Cashel writes. Grab a copy of it. I'm serious. From Unmasking Obama. Yeah, I'm really showing that well, huh? Unmasking Obama. To TWA Flight 800, to Ron Brown's body, to Ashley, the latest, of course. This is good and timely as well. So I'm honored to have him, 17 books under his belt. And I've got to say that there's not a bad one among them. So definitely, hey, Christmas shopping, there it is on your screen.
Yeah,
folks.
And by the way, Ashley is my highest rated book ever in terms of aggregate rating on Amazon.
Really?
Yeah, it's running at 5 stars, which is after, you know, 100 reviews or however many, I don't know. It's really pretty heartening, especially since, you know, it's not a feel-good book necessarily. Although I will say this about it, and what I think makes it a more positive, more uplifting story than you might think, and that is of the 8 women who survived, none of them broke. None of them went to the judge and said, oh, I didn't know what I was doing. Donald Trump tricked me into coming to Washington. You know, the temptation was there to do that. And clearly I'm sure even the defense attorneys were saying, hey, tell them you didn't know what you're doing. You're an idiot. You fell in with QAnon or whatever. No, they all stay true to the school. I mean, Rachel Powell, who was serving 4.5 years for breaking a window, said, you know, I regret breaking a window. I don't regret going to Washington. I don't regret protesting. Mother of 8, by the way, 4.5 years, broken window.
4.5 years. Mother of 8.
Is that and by contrast, the people who literally disrupted an official proceeding, one of the charges laid against the January 6ers,
the 1512C violation, right?
The Kavanaugh protesters literally did that in the room where the hearing was going on. They're in there. They stand up. They start squawking, carrying on. Capitol Police have to drag them out, you know, suspend momentarily the hearing. And they got as punishment. And this is hard to believe, the contrast, and that no one's picked up on this. $30 to $50 fines, right?
Yep.
And it's So you get dragged out by the police in a Kavanaugh hearing, you get a $30 fine. You get dragged out of the police out of the Capitol by just for protesting the certification hearing, you get 6 years in prison. It's something is not quite right there.
I'd say not. And yeah, exactly. Yeah, just incredible. And people are trying to justify the justice system. And then, of course, the left, the media, MSNBC, I don't know, what would they have? A couple of dozen people that watch that. You know, saying what? Saying that, I mean, just dismissing the Kavanaugh behavior, the, hey, the riots in Ferguson, the riots basically everywhere where there were riots, and really coming down so hard on the J6ers. It's just crazy. So I do hope President Trump does a blanket pardon of nonviolent and looks very closely at the people in prison for, well, you know, breaking a window. Okay. You know, I don't know, but I hope that justice will be given. And I do hope that there's some civil liability on the people involved in this. If J6 was a massive setup, could there be civil liability?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of these people will at some point receive restitution for the, you know, the lost wages, lost time, the damages done to them. And, you know, and when you compare this with, not just with, you know, the Kavanaugh hearings or even the Ferguson or George Floyd in general, compare it with the George Floyd protests in Washington, D.C. in May and June of 2020, which lasted for several weeks and involved massive amounts of damage, vandalism, burning a church, you know, right across from the Capitol.
Yep.
At least 60 Secret Service agents were injured. The first family had to be sequestered in a bunker, right? And this lasted for literally 2 weeks or even a little bit more. And we don't hear anything about that. And yet when you look at what happened in the Capitol on January 6th, here's what you don't see is vandalism, right? If these people were vandals and they wanted to destroy, you're inside the Capitol, you're in the statutory hall, you're in the rotunda, you could have done irreparable damage to like priceless pieces of Americana. Instead, there's essentially, other than, you know, some broken windows and door frames, close to no damage, no vandalism, no spray painting, no graffiti, no none of that. And someone I like, and whenever I say that, and someone will have to say, well, how about the feces on the wall? I said, you know, I'd like to, I don't believe that for a second. That's their comeback. How about the feces? Well, you just, well, if there was feces on the wall, I don't know how it got there. Who puts feces on a wall? You wipe it off. You know, you spray it down. End of story, you know. But
you know, I've heard that, but isn't it kind of odd that we have never seen photographs, pictures, video, even incidentally of that, okay?
No, that's exactly right. And it's one of the many casual lies that they tell. I mean, so some of you see these hero officers like Harry Dunn, you know, and the other guy Fanone, and now they're breaking down their timelines, their day, and everything they said is a lie, you know? I mean, in Harry Dunn's case, virtually everything he said about that day was a lie.
Yeah.
From the time he got there, the time he left, what he did, where he was.
Exactly.
Because they can trace now every minute of his day at the Capitol on January 6th. And they're doing that. And who's doing that? I think it's, it's either, I think it's Darren Beatty's doing that. I think Revolver's doing that series, which is just, I just find it fascinating to watch.
I
don't know people like that who can lie so shamelessly and boldly.
You're exactly right. And the obviously, folks, you know, police officers were killed on January 6th. Officer Sicknick had a organically problematic stroke the next day, and yep. And the rest were, I believe, the police died at their own hands.
You know what the worst injury was that day? And New York Times inadvertently gave away the game. They were doing boo-hoo article on the 1,400 cops were injured that day. I think that was the number they used. The great majority of whom were injured by friendly fire from their own misapplied, gas releases. But they start off their sentence with, Officer so-and-so lost the tip of his pinky finger, right? Now, I wouldn't want to lose the tip of my pinky finger. I'd probably howl if I lost the tip of my pinky finger. I'd like to get it back. But this isn't September 11th.
Really?
I mean, how do you lose the tip of your pinky finger? Probably get it caught someplace. You're trying to stop someone from doing something. You're caught in a door or something. I don't know. But it's unfortunate someone lost their pinky finger, the tip of their pinky finger.
But by comparison, when you look at the peaceful protesters getting, Roseanne Boyland, okay? Yeah. I mean, enough said, I suppose, by comparison. So, yeah, 100%. I know we're getting close on time here. I do want to ask you again on your December 12th article, if I can change topics here, about the killer of Seth Rich, because like everything else, I think that there's like one piece of evidence that will break open a case, and obviously this a case by itself, the murder of Seth Rich, but this is I believe part of a broader case. But you write here, find the killer of Seth Rich, solve this 2016 murder, and the DC House of Cards comes tumbling down. And this is, folks, this is a good way to support Jack, his writings on Substack. Become a subscriber. I'm telling you, it's well worth it, especially when you get to the article about Jimi Hendrix being Obama's father. We won't go there. That's just, I was howling about that. But anyway, about Seth Rich, what the heck? You had Assange basically giving up the goods
interesting way of background for those who may not know, Doug. Right. I mean, he was a DNC staffer who was involved in data analysis. So he had access to their technology and their computers. He was apparently also a Bernie supporter who was upset by the way the DNC had sabotaged Bernie's primary campaign in 2016, which they did. And that came out in the leaked emails. He was murdered. We know that he was murdered. There was a body. This isn't like, a make-believe, he died of a heart attack or something. No, he was shot and killed after being beaten up.
Right.
At a Washington, D.C. street corner about 3:30 in the a.m. Near his, not too far from his house in a very kind of upscale D.C. neighborhood. And the police wrote it off as a botched robbery, even though the robbers did not take his watch, his wallet, or his cell phone. So from the beginning, it raised suspicions everywhere except in the major media newsrooms, who didn't want to know about this story at all. And then Julian Assange added fire, added fuel to this, I should say, fire, when he went on a Dutch TV program and talked about Seth Rich, and said how his sources run risks. And then he offered a $20,000 reward for his killer. And then he was coy about whether Rich was actually one of his sources, because he said, I'd never reveal names of my sources. However, and I got into this deeply. I talked to a couple of people involved, Ty Clevenger, who's now the attorney who's pushing this forward. Ed Butowski was a good guy who got caught in the middle of it. And then there's the case of Ellen Ratner, which is fascinating. She's a you know, B-level media TV personality, Democrat, Hillary, you know, kind of prototypical. But her brother, Michael, was a radical lawyer who had been Julian Assange's attorney when Assange was in England. And Assange, Michael dies organically, also legitimately of cancer. But he, Ellen, became close to Assange. She visits with him I guess this would have been right before the election of 2016. And Assange tells her, yes, he names the Rich brothers, Seth, and I believe his brother's name is either Adam or Aaron, according to Assange. I'll throw it reportedly in front of that, but that's what Assange told Ratner. Ratner had no interest in making this up because it argues against her establishment, the Democratic establishment. Butowski gets involved. He gets the parents involved. It gets messy. The parents start backing away and all. Finally, Ty Clevenger, this Texas attorney, gets involved. And he finds out that, in fact, and this is where it could become interesting very quickly, is that, and he's been working on this now for at least a year or two, that the FBI has in its possession Seth Rich's laptops, both personal and work, right?
And I didn't realize there were two. Yeah. There was a personal laptop as well as a work laptop. Okay.
And I talked to Ty about a week ago, and he tells me that they have until February 7th to produce it, right?
I was surprised that there was – I haven't heard anything really about, you know, the case. So this coming February of 2025.
Yeah.
So, okay, the FBI lied. They cheated for 5 years in order to hide that laptop report. And it's still fighting to hide that report from the public. To no one's surprise, the FBI has slow-walked Clevenger's request to get access to the information. So he also writes, or you also write that, quoting him, I don't expect anything before February 7th. And that's the date ordered by the court.
Now, I know your audience will be shocked to hear. That the FBI is capable of concealing a laptop for political purposes. You know, they would never do anything like that. But that's crazy talk, right? It's conspiracy theory. No, unfortunately, we know it's not conspiracy theory. You know,
yeah,
I don't once. Find, yep. Shame on me. Shame on you. Shame on me. You know.
Yeah, in 2019, Hunter Biden laptop. Yeah, I guess we shouldn't have been surprised considering Seth Rich's laptops. And so what surprised me about Seth Rich, his murder, was his parents being very disinterested in this whole thing.
I think it's more complex than that.
Okay.
And I think it may involve, I could see how easily they could be intimidated.
Yeah.
Someone in authority just comes to them and say, okay, Seth is dead, but Aaron is still alive. And Aaron is not, could be implicated in this as well. And we recommend that for the safety and security of you and your family, you back off this, right?
Well, yeah.
And then again, I'm speculating here. I don't know that to be true. Well, I could see how easily they could be gotten to.
And I would say this. When you look into the attempted assassination of President Trump and Butler, from what I can personally attest to is that's not out of, I mean, that's, I'm convinced that there have been statements made. In fact, I've been told there were statements made to that effect to people.
So, you don't want to, the statements like, you don't want to talk about this. It wouldn't be in your best interest, right?
Yeah, threats made or implied threats made. Yeah. So, okay. But yes. and then I find it very interesting here where you have in your article, where did I see this? Anyway, you did connect DNC head Donna Brazile to Rich, obviously. Wasn't, by the way, didn't Brazile as well as Muriel Bowser, wasn't Rich taken to the hospital, and wasn't Brazile and Bowser present at the hospital upon his arrival? Or
that's the story. I have not been able to verify that. And okay. I'm not sure that's true.
Okay.
At the time, you know, it's curious because Donna Brazile benefited from the revelation of these emails, because that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was bounced from the head of the DNC.
Right.
Tilted the deck, tilted the playing field towards Bernie, towards Hillary. And then Donna Brazile came in and took over the job, right?
Right.
But she dedicates her book, a book called Hacks. I don't know whether that's the name of the, talking about the hacking of a computer or the hacks who ran the Clinton campaign in 2016, to Seth Rich, right? Now, the media don't even find this story interesting. They don't find it interesting that Donna Brazile is dedicating her book to him, right?
Right.
To a guy, she could barely have known him, right? Now, sometimes they give away, they almost want to hand you like a big piece of evidence, but for the media, it's not big enough. You got to lob them over the head with it. And even then, they don't want to know.
That's, it's, I look at this and, you know, you don't have to be Columbo to understand something is really, really wrong here.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the same, it's always the same people too. In this case, when the DNC was allegedly hacked, it wasn't a hack, it was a download, but okay, when they were allegedly hacked, did they give the computers to the FBI? No, they gave it to CrowdStrike by way of Perkins Coie.
Perkins Coie, right.
And Perkins Coie was the law firm essentially behind the Steele dossier.
And
go ahead.
And the Obama birth certificate. Right?
And there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Which you point out in your Substack article. And at Jack Cashel, folks, the link to Jack's Substack will be in the program description box at HagmanPI.com. So all of this, you know, how things are just connected. Yeah. It's just amazing. It really is.
You know, it's funny, and there's so much of it. A fellow I know who's a very sophisticated California attorney, and he was the lead independent investigator on the Vince Foster case, right?
Oh,
now we're going back 30 years to the death of the presumed suicide of, I mean, Vince Foster was the Seth Rich of his era, basically.
Yeah, and by the way, I was at Fort Marcy Park just right out shortly thereafter, looking at the crime scene right after the FBI got done digging up the ground. But okay,
yeah, I was there twice. In fact, it was the second time I was there. First time I had to stop by myself. Second time I went with John Clark, who is an attorney representing interested parties in the Vince Foster case. And John's a funny guy. And we went on a, you have these stupid misadventures in the course of your career. You probably had many of your own. Well, it had snowed, and then there was an icing on top of the snow, so you could barely stand up. So we went to the fabled berm, you know, where the body was found.
Okay.
And we're standing at the top of the berm. We started walking down, we both slipped, and we both slid. Poor Vince, there's just, you know, memorial berm on our butts, you know, at the bottom of the hill. And yeah, it was kind of a silly day. But so he calls me and says, what do you think the odds are, the chances are that Cash Patel will take up Vince Foster, you know? I said, Alan, get a ticket and stand in line. You know, so there's about a dozen stories crying out for exposition before we get to Vince Foster. And I'll start with 2W800. I'm ahead of you in that line. You know, I got to,
man,
I put Seth Fritsch ahead of them, you know?
Yeah, if I mean, just by virtue of the recency of evidence, you know, if we can work backwards, I think a lot of it, of course, a lot of the same people, I think, are going to be netted up by the investigation, by the inquiries, whether it be Seth Rich, TW800, or Vince Foster, or Ron Brown. Well,
Ron Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, and folks, if you, again, we'll leave a link at HagmanPI.com, but make sure you check out all of Jack Heschel's books. I mean, you talk about a man who knows where the bodies are buried, or has a good sniffer to find where the bodies are. It is Jack Heschel, and he knows which questions need asked. So I really appreciate, you know, really appreciate
it. And I
got
to give a shout out to the legacy media here, Doug, because had they done their job, I would not have had a career, right?
Oh, that, okay, I mean, yeah, yeah.
How is it that I'm just some schlub in Kansas City, and yet I get to be the principal chronicler of the story of TWA Flight 800, the principal chronicler of the death of Ron Brown, the principal chronicler of the death of Trayvon Martin, right?
That's true.
Probably the leading authority in America on Barack Obama, you know?
That's true.
Because they're not doing their job. They leave the big stories for people like independent researchers like me. And what I do in Unmasking Obama is I tell the stories of all those independent guys and women who broke all the big news stories about Barack Obama for the 8 years of his presidency. Not a single one came from the top down. They all came from the bottom up and the bottom right up. And sometimes there'd be intermediaries who'd pick up a story, like, say, Cheryl Atkinson did for, and she was at CBS then, cost her a job, of course, nearly her sanity, or Laura Logan and some others who would pick up stories once they'd reached a certain level. But they all originated from the grassroots. As one guy called it, an army of Lilliputians, right? Telling the stories that the major media refused to tell.
Until the point became
where the major media, well, they couldn't even deny them anymore. Then they just try to ignore them, you know?
I hope the American people are starting to grasp that it's really, you know, when people refer to the deep state, there is a deep state, but I do believe that there's a thin veneer attempting to protect the deep state that are both incompetent. I think some are stupid, and cockiness also plays a role here too. Because I think some of them have an idea that, hey, I'll be protected no matter what,
right.
You know? But you've done just a tremendous job unearthing all kinds of stuff. We got about a minute and a half left here, if my preview clock is correct, or my
yeah. I would say let me reiterate. Christmas here is Ashley, a perfect stocking stuffer
for
people in your life. And Doug, I want to thank you for the job you do. It's really a pleasure coming on a show with someone who knows even more than I do about all this stuff. You know, it's like playing tennis with someone who can play at your level, you know?
I wouldn't go that far. Sometimes I fake it a lot, but no, I love your writing style, and it's easy to understand. For example, the way you wrote about Ron Brown's body, and folks, hey, I'm going to tell you, all of this stuff is connected, and you're going to be better for getting all of the books, or as many as you can. But it's easy to, with you as a writer, it is just tremendous. So I really appreciate that. If I can, you lay it out where anyone can understand it. So,
you're absolutely right. I try to make it comprehensible. You know, I don't want to lose people with the information that's not necessary, or that's irrelevant, or that's unprovable, or just speculative.
Yeah.
So if I write it, I get the, you know, when I saw George Stephanopoulos being busted for just outright lying, that's an ABC level. It's a 50. 50-